Good morning. This is the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This is, I'm Mary Tomich.
Tom Lawrence.
Tony Bemis.
And this is our Fresh Looks episode, apt-get install SQL Server, MS SQL Server,
MS
as
SQL
a matter
Server.
Of fact. And joining us this morning for our podcast, we have Travis Wright, who is a principal PM for
the SQL Server engineering team.
There you go. Yeah. Thank you, Travis.
Great. Thanks for having us.
And we also have J.G. Chirapparat, who is general manager of
the data platform business.
Very good. Thank you so much for joining us this
Thank
morning.
You.
You know, one thing we like to do, and I think our listeners also like to do, is to find out a little bit about your background as far as it relates to Linux. So I think it would be kind of fun to see if you've got any early Linux experience, or if you had a chance to when you were young or
right.
younger.
Yeah, younger. Yeah, so I'm relatively new to Linux. So I actually started working with Linux kind of full time when I took on this project to bring SQL Server to Linux a couple of years ago.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
It's been awesome.
It's been a big learning curve then.
It has been, but that's what I was looking for in coming into this role. So it's been really great. I switched over to using macOS as my primary driver every day at the same time, trying to get familiar with all the different kinds of ways that people might use SQL Server once we brought SQL Server to Linux.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Excellent. And JG, what about you?
Yeah, in my case, I actually had a startup. I founded a startup that had hardware appliances that scale data centers. So in creating the startup, I had to find an OS. So I used Hard Hat, and I stripped it down, Hard Hat Linux, stripped it down to create an embedded OS. Ah. So that is my background with Linux. And then years later, here we are again.
Yeah. I find that common around the people that we're talking about here is, well, I used Linux so much, a long time ago, and then now we're coming in and it's being integrated with a lot of these Microsoft products. Is that
right?
Now it's awesome to get back and working with them. And I love those stories. Even though, new people coming in, new to Linux, that's what we are really after, is getting people, to use Linux and open source stuff.
Absolutely. It's been a very welcoming community, I would say. Like, we've gotten a lot of support from the community as we've gone along through this journey. So it's been awesome.
Yeah. It almost seemed implausible. We talked about it on one of our episodes maybe over a year ago that you announced that you're bringing it. And we're like, this can't be true. It's an April Fool's joke. Like,
I almost fell off my chair.
It was an April Fool's joke. Actually, a couple of times throughout the years, people would post blog posts or whatever as a joke about it on April Fool's.
Yeah.
But then it was real. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and so really interesting to us. I mean, it's like the community's like, well, how's this going to work? How's the licensing going to work? And all that. So start with that. Is it licensed the same? Am I just removing the Microsoft Server out of it, but the same licensing model, the same database with the same features?
Yeah, it's the same licensing model for sure. So the way to think of it is that SQL Server is the product, and you license that in the same way that you always kind of license SQL Server. But now you just have a new deployment option. You can put it on Linux if you want.
And not just on Linux, we can also put it in a container.
Yes, that's right. Exactly. Yeah, so you can run it on any Docker engine, whether it's Docker engine on Linux or Docker for Mac or Windows, and kind of have the flexibility of being able to develop in a consistent way across all the operating systems. And so regardless of which operating system people on your team want to use, they have a consistent way that they can use it if they just run a Linux container.
I'm just going to ask a quick question. I'm kind of interested as far as the germ for this idea, where it started. Did it come from inside the SQL Server team, or was there some kind of upper management vision as far as where they think, hey, in the future it looks like there's a lot of Linux servers in the data center and we've got to start to look at that? How did that really come about?
Yeah, so it's one of these things that every few years it would come up within the engineering team or the management team to discuss, like, should we bring it to Linux, right? And it's one of those things where I'd say there was kind of two challenges to that. One was just sort of the political inertia, if you will, within Microsoft and, the sort of tie that we had to Windows, right? And then the other was just technically, how feasible would that be?
Right.
And kind of the two of those things kind of were resolved about the same time when we had Satya come to the helm at Microsoft. That really changed the dynamics within Microsoft a lot. And then the second thing that happened really was that we figured out a technical way to make it possible with the platform abstraction layer, right? And that allowed us to bring SQL Server to Linux with a reasonable amount of engineering effort, right? Yeah. And the two things combined made it possible. And then I would say just in general, as you look at the market out there, Linux is obviously growing rapidly. A lot of the interesting spaces out there in the industry, whether it be big data or DevOps or scientific research, a lot of these kinds of things, AI. Linux is very popular in that space. We want to get SQL Server into that, you know, that space, bring the power of SQL Server to those different areas.
So is a lot of it, Satya Nadella saying, go where the customers are, that philosophy means you bring your product to the customer. If not, you lose them. I mean, that's...
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's just, it's pretty straightforward when you think about it, but Satya was certainly a big catalyst in bringing that change to Microsoft.
I think that just to add to what Travis said, I think we've had leaders in the SQL engineering team that are also very principled about it. You know, they've built a great product for 25 years, and here we are sitting 25 years later releasing the same SQL Server on Linux. The Rohan Kumar, who couldn't be here, you know, told me the germ of the idea for this release was born sharing a cup of soup with a bunch of his colleagues, okay, and basically taking that back up the leadership chain and explaining why this is important to us. As Travis said, the most important thing for us is providing flexibility and choice of where our customers are, in kinds of platforms they want to use, in the kinds of languages they want to use with our products. And so this is really an instantiation of that promise, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was speaking with a gentleman that's in the audience just a few seconds before we started, and he was just talking about how he's really impressed. He's running it and been running for a little while, and was really impressed with the low latency of it, because the logic is running in one container and the SQL in the other container on the same platform. So you have this really fast integration. I think that's a really neat concept on there. For that, can you guys speak to like some of the engineering that went into that, and was that some of the thoughts, like, you know, your customers aren't just there, but you know you could build a faster product in some methods because they have this Docker's already ready with some of the SQL logic?
Yeah, I mean, the Docker aspect of bringing SQL Server to Linux has been a huge win, I think, from a customer's point of view. It's always interesting, like, we do these presentations on SQL Server on Linux, and the number one thing that I think people sort of take away with is, did you see him start up a SQL Server container in less than a second on his MacBook? That's so crazy. You know, and especially people that are sort of used to installing SQL Server on Windows and doing next, and this kind of thing. I think that's sort of mind-blowing to him. But, definitely the flexibility of being able to package together your SQL Server container with your app containers, be able to Docker compose up those things, and be able to deploy those things to container platforms like Kubernetes or OpenShift and that kind of thing. It's just a huge degree of flexibility that people get. And like you said, it's also very fast, right?
Yeah.
Whether it's in terms of fast to deploy or it's fast in terms of the performance of it. People ask me, like, well, you know, what's the performance impact of running a container? And I said, you know, it's better than running in a VM. You know? So if you can get your stuff running on a container on hardware, then that's super fast. You know?
And it's really interesting because when we were walking around and meeting people out in the vendors, some of them are talking about the big data they're doing with point of sale and things like that. And it's the same thing. You create these very fast data sets, and things are moving very fast in retail market. We got a Christmas sale. Let's do some analysis. And we now, a few commands later, I've dockered up here's an extra instance so we can duplicate the data and start applying logic to it right away. Right. I think that's one of those hidden benefits of it. Like you said, it's so fast to deploy.
Yeah.
That's really
awesome.
Cool.
Yeah.
You know, I was talking to the Red Hat guys down there, and if you want to do some testing development, you don't have to run CentOS or some of the other free. You can run full Red Hat.
Yes.
And they have a free developer version that you can download and install.
Yeah.
And they have a GitHub script on GitHub that will go through and do the yum install and configure SQL Server for you. And then, you know, within just a matter of 5 minutes, you can have it running without just running a script, and you're good to go.
Yeah, absolutely. I saw that same demo.
Did you?
Down at the Red Hat booth. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Mark Heslin showed it to me. Yep.
You know, and
yeah,
I was going
Mike, right.
I was going to ask a question, too, when Tony mentioned CentOS. You know, there are quite a few, I'll say, variations of Red Hat where people have taken it and they've... the basics or the bare bones of Red Hat and have made it available as, I'll say, a community edition of that particular Linux distribution.
Yep.
So as far as anybody wanting to put SQL Server on something like that, whether it's CentOS or it's, I want to say, Scientific Linux, some of those other ones, what's the consensus as far as the availability of it there?
Right. So we don't block people doing that, but we definitely recommend running SQL Server in general on a supported distribution of Linux, right? So we've created very tight relationships with Canonical and Red Hat and SUSE to make sure that when somebody calls Microsoft support for support with SQL Server, if it comes down to an OS issue, we can seamlessly hand that off to the support orgs in those other distribution support providers, right? So if you're doing something like CentOS, then that's maybe not as good of an option for you in terms of support, right? So we... Not that we discourage people, we it's more like we encourage them to use a supported distribution. Yeah. And I think kind of one of the interesting things that comes up occasionally is, you know, Oracle Linux is one of these that's, you know, downstream of RHEL, right? So people ask us, like, well, are you guys going to support SQL Server on Oracle Linux? And, you know, so far that's just sort of an interesting idea. We're not quite there yet, but
We'd rather you take that Oracle database and use SQL Server instead.
Right, yeah.
So what's the what's some of the other things you might be bringing there with it? Are all the, like, some of the analytical tools that you use for SQL, are all those available on Linux as well, or are they being ported to it? Where are you at on that part of it?
Right. So if you think about things like Power BI or SQL Server reporting services, some of those kinds of things, they don't run on Linux today.
Right.
But you can connect them to SQL Server on Linux, right? So if you want to have your, you know, your analytics or your DW type database running on SQL Server on Linux, that's fine. You can still use Microsoft's tools. You can use other tools out there. It's just SQL Server, right?
Yeah.
So the front end of SQL Server, the door is still the same, right? So you can still get to it from anywhere.
And the thing that I'll say is the journey that we've been on with SQL Server is that, you know, you get everything that's it's built in. We're not sort of taking workloads and splitting it apart, right? We're saying that all of it is in there and it's the same price, you know, and regardless of what you run it on. So that philosophy is something that's very dear to us and we'll continue investing in it.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah, and what I was getting at, so at right this moment, I still would need a Windows box to do some of that other, the Power BI and things like that.
Just, I see.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's fine. Just making sure for some of our listeners, because we have a big Linux base, that they understand that they can spin up the server, they can apply the logic, but they still, for some of those other things, that function isn't ported over.
Yeah. Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. So analysis services and reporting services are components of SQL Server.
Yeah.
They come included in the license, but they only run on Windows today.
Yeah. Right.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Can we hint if there's any tomorrow for that being ported? Or?
You know, on that one, it's really kind of one of these things where we have a finite number of resources within analysis services and reporting services orgs, and they're spending a big percentage of their time on Power BI right now.
Yeah.
And they've been doing Power BI Report Server, which is sort of the on-premise version of that now. And so it's really one of these things that's just really a function of customer demand versus the other priorities that they have. And we have had, you know, quite a bit of interest in having analysis services and reporting services on Linux as well. But you know, as of right now, there's not a concrete plan on when that might happen. But,
and I imagine customer demand for it, as adoption goes forward, you may see more customer demand for it.
Definitely.
So.
Yeah, yeah, I would expect so.
Yeah.
And just to add to what Tom asked, I was kind of curious as far as, you know, once it was announced, of course, everybody, all the customers who had a SQL Server in their data center, they'd have Windows servers, they'd have Linux servers, but they were constrained to run it on in a Windows environment.
Right.
What has been the kind of the shift? Have you 20% of the customers? I'm not sure if you're able to say this, but
I'm not sure we know a number really.
You seen people a shift where they've taken it off Windows server and moved it over to Linux server?
I don't know if that's really something we've seen yet, and we can can't really comment on it. I'll just give you a perspective on things like trial volumes.
Okay.
Our typical trial volumes are in the 200,000s. Our current trial volumes is over 2 million trials. Mm. So it's about 10x. If I did my math right, it's 10x. It's early in the morning, no coffee. So it's 10x more than we usually see. Mm-hmm. There's tremendous pent-up demand and tremendous interest in this product. And, you know, so it's, I know I speak for everyone when I say it's just a real pleasure to see this happen and to bring it to the market on Linux.
Oh, I think so. And I used to work for a large multinational corporation, and one of our products was, there were several components that Microsoft components that came together, and I was always trying to get them to move it from Windows to Linux, but it would require a lot of development work on my company's part. But it's interesting now because some of our customers at the time, they had Linux servers, and of course they then had to put it on Microsoft servers, and now I see some flexibility there as far as what they're going to be able to do.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think, you know, there's some customers out there that, you know, for whatever reason, we don't need to get into the, you know, the reasons why, but like they've chosen Linux as their, you know, primary OS, right? And they would oftentimes have an island of Windows servers that were there specifically to run SQL Server because they were using some ISV application that had a dependency on that. Mm-hmm. Well, now they have this option where they can, you know, go Linux 100%, right? And so that's a good option for them to have. You know.
And you'll probably see a bigger adoption when there's a life cycle change goes through and they go, okay, time to get new servers. What are we going to go with? Well, now we got this option. We can just load this whole SQL, that little island we had of Windows that only ran SQL. Now we can just move our entire stack over to Linux and be more consolidated. How does the authentication, obviously we can use we're used to Active Directory and things like that for, but if they're not running some of that, is there any different facilities built into the Linux version versus the Windows version?
So we do have, you know, just the SQL Server logins, right? Yeah. That's the login password kind of approach there. And we also have Active Directory authentication built in. So you can have your Linux server that's running SQL Server be domain joined, and you can authenticate to that SQL Server instance just like you would a SQL Server on Windows. And that's as far as we've gone so far, right? So we're looking into, you know, maybe in the future having the ability to use local Linux accounts to be able to log in, and then potentially other Kerberos-based authentication providers.
Kerberos
as well.
Or PAM or some of the other authentication models.
Yeah. So down the road, you know, based on customer demand, we'll try to add in some other options for folks.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
Excellent.
I'm not sure if you guys can speak to this, but do you know about compliance? You know, I work in healthcare, and so compliance with healthcare is very important. Is there any difference with running this on a Linux server?
So I think the way I would answer that is that it's almost exactly the same. And in fact, because of the way that we've done this with the platform abstraction layer, the same exact binaries that we ship for SQL Server on Windows are the ones that show up on Linux. So we literally take the binaries that are produced by our builds, and we just repackage those same binaries and provide those on Linux. And so in that sense, it's just the same product, right? Wow. And really, there's just a few differences that we've made in order to make SQL Server feel native to Linux. You know, so you look at like how we install it, or you know, how you configure it, things like that that we've made that feel like Linux, right? But otherwise, it's just the same product. So we have the same level of encryption capabilities. The encryption actually works exactly the same. Kind of one of the fun demos we like to do is we take a database that's encrypted on SQL Server on Windows, and we just bring that over as a backup, restore to SQL Server on Linux, and it just works.
Awesome.
So
I was
going to
ask something along those lines about migrating and how, were there any little intermediate steps you'd have to go through to?
It's pretty straightforward. You just do a backup, restore. You can do detach, attach. You can do export, import. And one of the funnest things that we like to demo too, like we just have all these fun demos, right? It's like, we have this notion of always-on availability groups, which is our high availability solution for SQL Server, and it's a replication-based HA. So you have multiple nodes, and then the primary is your write, and then it replicates to multiple read nodes. And what we've done is we've actually provided, we had customers ask us, well, can I have an always-on availability group which spans Linux and Windows? First I was like, what are you talking about? That's crazy. That is the silliest thing. But after we got to talking to customers, they're like, no, I want to use this as a way to migrate back and forth or to have like an operating system level redundancy. And we're like, wow, that's actually kind of interesting.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was thinking.
And so we actually built it, you know, and so people can add Linux nodes to their Windows Always On Availability Group or vice versa, and then they can have all the data replicate across, and then whenever they're ready, they just do a failover.
It brings up such an interesting concept because if you have a zero day in any operating system, you can just shut down the one. So my HA is, my plan is that I'll shut down the operating system until we get that one patched and we'll run on the other one.
That was exactly the scenario they brought up.
Yeah, really interesting.
And I don't think there's any other database provider out there that has this OS level redundancy.
No,
right?
I can't name anything. That's a really clever... you know, that's a new worry we have now.
Right.
We have operating system redundancies now.
Yes, exactly. So we're the leaders, I guess.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's one of these things where it's not really intended to be an HA solution because there's no cluster manager yet anyway that spans across Windows and Linux. There's no automatic failover.
Yeah.
But if you needed to manually failover for a zero day or something, sure.
You can.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Wow, yeah.
That's a really interesting concept.
Yeah. So thank you, customers out there that came up with that idea. That was beautiful. So at first I thought you were crazy, but you're not.
I think
but
of all
customers always right in the end.
Yeah. That's right.
Think of all the Microsoft initiatives into the Linux world. SQL Server was the most exciting, you know, as far as I'm concerned, because it was, you know, having worked with customers who wanted to do do their databases one way, but they had to kind of constrained. This was really exciting for them.
Yeah.
So you guys have done a great job.
Awesome, thank you.
So in terms of community feedback, like you said, the number's staggering for how many people are in your demo for the Linux. How has the Linux community been towards you guys in terms of feedback and helping drive some of the features or design of implementing on Linux?
Yeah, I would answer that maybe a couple ways. One is, you know, the community at large, you know, and I think when we first made the announcement, we weren't sure what to expect, right? It's like, are people going to be embracing us, or is there going to be some animosity? We didn't know, and the feedback was overwhelmingly very positive. It was very refreshing to see. We were all sort of, celebrating a bit in our engineering team. But then I would also say that, you know, in terms of working with partners, it's been very awesome as well. Like, you know, so we made the announcement, we started working with Red Hat, and they came out to see us in Redmond, and their engineers just jumped right in. We had a couple engineers sort of peel off from the conversation. They went over into a room, and they immediately got SQL Server up and running on RHEL within like a couple hours after we actually made the announcement. It was amazing to just see everybody just sort of jump right in and start working with us. So
yeah.
Very embracing, actually. Yeah.
Wow.
Cool.
That's great.
So you said it runs on like an abstraction layer within Linux. Was that something you guys developed, or was that another team within Microsoft?
You know, it's something that has kind of evolved over time in a way that I don't think we ever really sort of expected it would. And it's happened over almost a decade, more than a decade now, actually. So if you go back to SQL Server 2005, at the time we introduced a layer in SQL Server called SQL OS. And the idea with that was to bring some of the hardware resource management up out of the kernel and into user mode, into the SQL Server process, so that we could manage the hardware and get better performance, because we didn't want to rely on a general purpose operating system to do that for us.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did all that work so that at that point we were really dependent on Windows for the hardware layer even, right? And so that was kind of one big step. The other big step that happened along the way was this project in Microsoft Research called Drawbridge. And Drawbridge was a project that the idea was to kind of have like a micro kernel almost, or a kind of a process isolation that you could have, where you could have multiple processes running side by side on a box, and they could be their own sandbox. And ultimately, that's a lot like a container. And
right.
Docker was kind of taken off about the same time, and so they kind of abandoned the project. But we picked it up as a way for us to create a operating system environment that was kind of isolated itself. And so one of the things they figured out as part of this project is that the entire Win32 API surface area ultimately boils down to about 50 application binary interfaces underneath.
Mm.
And so we took that project, brought it in, combined it with SQL OS, and then we implemented what we call a host extension underneath. So those 50 application binary interfaces that the entire thing boils down to, we just remap those onto the appropriate APIs depending upon which operating system we're actually running on. And that's kind of how it works, right? And so the crazy thing about this whole thing is that you have Windows. We take a few of the binaries from Windows, and we actually ship those in a package with the SQL Server binaries, and that's what you install on Linux. So you actually have Windows running on Linux when you install SQL Server on Linux.
That's
mind-blowing, right?
Okay, so I'm a little speechless.
That's going to bring me to the next question of what's next. I mean, this concept doesn't just apply to SQL. This could apply to other things. Maybe you can't speak to what product might move next, but that's interesting. We end up with our own Active Directory server on there?
So one of the first proof of concepts that we did was we actually had Reversi running, you know, the game running on top of this platform abstraction layer. So, you know, maybe we'll bring Reversi next.
We need to know when Minesweeper's coming.
Nothing that we can
it's
really
on
announce
the
right
roadmap.
Now.
But,
yeah. No, it's really interesting to think about, because you're just porting it over. Once you've built all that infrastructure, but you can't talk about it, but we already know there's people in Microsoft going, they're playing with things.
Yeah, sure, of course. We're always playing with things. Yeah.
It's a neat concept. I really like that. A lot of engineering goes into it, but the end result, it seems to be working.
It's a credit to the team that, the fact that all of this work was done in about,
what is it, 14 to 16 months after the last release.
Yeah. Wow, yeah.
So that is, I mean, just mind-blowing when you think about the pace of innovation.
Yeah, that absolutely. Went in
and, you know, and here we are, you know, we are announcing general availability.
Well, I think the fact that your CEO is, your current CEO is so much pushing for, you know, these for changes and this type of thing, I think it really helped that environment and helped that help move forward so quickly. I am kind of curious. I wanted to just while we're talking, you know, about the from beginning to, you know, where things are now, was there any kind of pushback internally from other groups or anything, or anything that you heard from others as far as?
Yeah, so I think probably the obvious group that you would think would have pushed Windows back would have been Windows Server, right?
Yeah.
But actually, they're very supportive of it, you know, which was a very important aspect of doing this whole thing, right? So I remember sitting around in the meeting with Scott Guthrie, and Mike Neal was there. He's the VP for Windows Server, and Mike Neal himself was very supportive as we were going through the strategy document and getting the approval from Scott Guthrie to do this. And you know, it's been a team effort, in fact, and the Windows Server team has been very supportive of us in doing this. And, you know, the key thing to all of this is, like I said, we ship these Windows binaries with SQL Server. So we really had to have the Windows team on board with us doing this.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really a cross-company effort to actually make this happen.
Impressive.
We were really impressed with, we got some backstory the other day from the Git and things like that, and some of the internal untold history, which is another podcast we're going to release after this one.
Okay.
And it was interesting because I had them date a couple things of when things started. And it's a reminder because you hear so much grumblings in the Linux community when you say Microsoft, and some of our fans are like, what are you guys doing on a Microsoft talking to them? But they immediately point to the Ballmer years. But the reality is, under him is when some of these other things started. The inroad was there. He may not have publicly announced that, oh, you know, it's cool, Linux, I don't handle no more. But it was still under before Nadella took over that the change was starting to happen, and because some of this story started back in 2012 with that. So
absolutely, yeah. I think, you know, Steve Ballmer would probably never get credit for it. But,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
it this wasn't, you know, all Satya, right? This did start, you know, sometime before. And
I'm so mad at him for saying it. You know,
yeah,
he's not
going to
apologize.
Yeah.
But I will admit, you know, I'll get credit where credit's due.
Yeah.
I think when we heard that, I was surprised because I was under the impression that he was, anti.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They allowed some stuff to happen. It was that very seed that began that led us to talking about SQL on Linux here.
I think what perhaps folks miss is, you know, in the era of cloud computing, you really have to take a posture of everyone is welcome. Right, and you know, so we learned a ton on that journey, right? I mean, you know that right now we have, from an open source perspective, we have public previews of Postgres, MySQL running as services in Azure Cloud. So it's not just, you know, a perspective, and this is the database team that's doing this.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just about our own commercial offering, it's also about looking at the world and saying where our customers are, what are they using, and how can we essentially provide solutions both on premises and in the cloud that can, you know, that can help them.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, you know, engineers that are on my team, you know, we do SQL Server, but engineers on our team are actually contributing code that make MySQL and Postgres work on Azure. You know, so there's we think of it more as a data platform team, and whether it's SQL Server or others, we're all in, right?
I think the cloud as a whole, as people are migrating and putting apps in there, it gives you great visibility into how people are really using things. Because we don't always see what's behind and running in the IT rooms and the back rooms, but suddenly you're like, wow, there are this many instances of Postgres spun up on Azure. There's this many instances of MySQL. So you get some insight into how they're using it, how the data's working. So it's really been interesting. Like you said, it's a big shared community because not one solution just fits all of them.
Exactly right. And we get a better telemetry into how our customers use it, and that helps us. But I think this journey, I mean, I even look at, you know, how we bought Hadoop and that whole Hadoop ecosystem in HD Insights onto Azure. We've done this. I mean, this has been really a five-year journey. And from a SQL Server perspective, I think, you know, it's just another click stop along the way, right? We've got a ways to go in bringing other things onto this platform, data platform.
In fact, you know, as we start working on the next version of SQL Server now, we have this perspective now that really bringing SQL Server to Linux is just it's opening a door, really, to some other areas that we want to go in and do now. And SQL Server on Linux is just the beginning of really the journey on that stuff. So, yeah.
Tell me a little bit about, and this is related to SQL Servers in general, like some of the AI integration. Did I see some of that's coming in there?
Yeah, so we have R and Python in SQL Server today, right? So you can actually run your R scripts or your Python scripts inside the database, right? Mm. Which is a unique thing, as far as I'm aware, in the database industry. That so instead of having to pull the data out of your database and process it on some R server, you can actually run your R and Python scripts right there inside of the database. You don't have to move the data around, right? So that should make it much faster. You don't move data out of compliance boundaries. You don't create copies of the data where you're, you know, potentially creating a greater attack surface area and so on. And I think that's a very unique way approach to doing it. And we've done a couple interesting things with SQL Server 2017 there, where we've now added support for Python in 2017. We've also added GPU acceleration. Yeah. So you can actually take advantage of GPU to really speed up the processing time. And also to kind of offload, right? Like, one of the questions people ask us is, like, do I really want to have those R and Python scripts running inside of my already busy database, right? Well, sure, now you have GPU acceleration.
Yeah,
so now
so you can,
you can offload a little bit, right? And then the last thing we've done in the 2017 release around the ML is that we have native real-time scoring inside of SQL Server. So right there within any T-SQL query, you can have we have a new predict function, and you can pass your data and your model to it, and we will go and make a prediction on the spot as you're going through. So you can actually do that on the fly as you're doing some data insertion, for example. And or if you're trying to build an application on top, you want to do a predict on the fly as you're getting the data out of the database. So very interesting stuff. It's available only on Windows at the moment, but that's going to be coming to SQL Server on Linux in the very near future.
Yeah. That's going to be interesting with the GPU, because we have some of these higher AI functions are just math crunching numbers build these models.
Yeah.
And I picture very, you know, having a lightweight interface on top and just querying the R and saying, give me the result of this big data analysis. I mean, everyone wants their data yesterday, their analysis now, so immediate.
Right.
And that seems like it would be very, very fast.
Yeah, and I think even in the case of Python, right, I think, you know, Travis will keep me honest, but it's, you know, you can actually take, you know that it has a really vibrant community.
Yes.
So you can actually take models that have been created in open source and then bring it and do this in-database training with data sitting in it, right? And from our perspective, our data tells us that, you know, this is the most widely deployed database in the world. So there's a ton of data that's sitting in there, and we believe that this is a way for us to help our customers unlock all of that value that's sitting in there in a completely different way.
Yeah, I working for years with databases myself, I worked in the Ford supply chain management, and that was always the challenge. We created amazing numbers of transactions, but applying the analytics is always the hardest part of that.
Yeah.
Collecting it, we collect every data point imaginable.
Right.
Now what?
Yeah,
right.
And we're on a query. Well, that's going to be about a day to really analyze it. And so it was just cool because we got to look at the hardware on there. Because everyone says the cloud, but it does run on something. And we're seeing all these boxes built with tons of GPUs in them.
Yes.
And so they're building the hardware that this is designed for, which is really cool.
So I've been reading some research stuff lately, and it's kind of just some thought-provoking things about how really in the AI space, all of the logic stuff is being open source, right? You look at whether it's Facebook Profit or CNTK or like all these things, it's all just open source and available to everyone. And so it's sort of democratizing, like, if to use a word from Satya, right, of AI, right? And it's very interesting to see that the intellectual property isn't in the AI algorithms. It's actually in the data, right?
Exactly.
So if you have the data, you have the power, right?
Yeah.
And one of the interesting things that I think we're starting to see now is the more data you have, the more accurate your AI can be, right?
Yeah.
So if you and I are competitors, and JG's a competitor, well, maybe you and I should combine our data together.
Yes.
You know, and then we have more and better data than JD does, right? So it's interesting to see, like, you know, what might happen here in the future, because it feels like data is becoming the you know, people talk about it as the gold of the of this, you know, era, right?
I don't know which booth has them, but maybe someone can tell me later. This says data is the new bacon. I see the shirts.
Yeah, I see
that
too.
I want a shirt that says that. I mean, I still like bacon, but it's that's
great.
That's,
yeah, I love that.
Yeah, I saw that too.
Yeah, and they're so right. It is the control. I mean, that's what you take companies like Facebook. Their value, their asset is all the data they have.
Yeah,
right.
And
yep.
It's not. I mean, they give away a lot of stuff open source, like you said. And here's the logic. Please all help contribute the logic better. But we're we're going to apply that to ours. Yeah. You apply it to yours.
Right.
And I think the perspective we have, even in the area of AI, right, I think we always say that a customer's data is of the most meaning to them. You know, even things like MS Graph, which is a sort of a representation of all of the ways that employees use, you know, mail and, you know, all of our office productivity tools. When you mash it up with your existing data, that provides you with ways to transform your business. And we're seeing that happen. We've got examples of customers doing it, numerous customers doing it. And you're even seeing things like, things that, you know, you talk about in, you know, sort of esoteric terms, like predictive maintenance. It's becoming a reality. Like, you know, we've got customers like Rolls-Royce, folks who are really sort of unpacking it with data and AI techniques that's within their walls.
Yeah,
it's interesting too. Ford, we're in Detroit, so Ford's a very influential company there. They just broke ground on a new data center they're building, and it's because they want to get into the car market in the self-driving version of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all about the data collection. I know people that are working on the data center team, and they're building something that is a data center, but they're hoping some of the things will catch up with it because they can accumulate data on cars in an absolutely incredible rate, but the processing power and the tools they're hoping are developed before they finish data center.
Yeah. Yeah. I heard a stat the other day that a Tesla generates a terabyte of data a month or something like that.
Yeah.
That's just insane. Yeah.
And they're almost like driving data centers, right? They've got like, what is it, 200 CPUs or some ridiculous
mobile data center.
Data center. You talk about an edge.
Never thought about it like that.
Talk about like an edge device that is fully capable.
It's amazing when you look at them because they have so many sensors, so many things they're gathering to try to do the most accurate predictive analysis of, is that, you know, it's because if the car is driving itself, we think about a lot of data points when we're watching, but when we're playing with our phones and we just want to let the car drive, which is my goal, that's what I want, is someone going to step out in front of you? Is that something real? Is it that, you know, so there's so much data it takes to analyze that, and that's now the big game right now is who can get the most data again from each one of these cars, because they're realizing Tesla was ahead of the curve because they were gathering data, not just because of the engineering.
That's right.
So Ford's going, hey, we have the sensors on the cars. Let's start bringing that data. Like you said, these terabytes of data that the car collects, and start analyzing it so we can get better at this.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I think one of the philosophies that we have, and, you know, I think, Travis, you were speaking about how we, you know, even in the case of Python and R, we bring it right into the database. We believe very strongly that you should not be forced to move data to derive insights from it. So we want our customers to be able to reason with data where it's born and where it lives. So some of this is born in the cloud. So all of these techniques we're talking about are fully functional in all of our cloud products as well. You know, even in the case of, say, a data lake that we have running in the cloud, you know, we have a customer that basically takes billions of images, drops it into the data lake, and then invokes cognitive services, the photo API, to say what the images contain. So, you know, we're seeing things that, you know, that are really in the data space, yet it's vastly expanding what the definition of that data space really means.
Now, that probably makes a little bit more sense. I was reading that you guys changed the way the blobs are stored in SQL and offer like a compression on them.
Yes.
Yeah,
that's a new feature in SQL Server 2017. We have support for column store for blobs, right? So column store is this awesome feature. It's so beautiful. You run one line of T-SQL and you can add a clustered column store index to your table, and you can get, depending upon what's going on, like 30 to 100 times better performance on your queries on that table.
Yeah.
And not only does it give you the much better performance, but it also compresses the data on disk because we deduplicate the data out. And now we can do that with blobs as well.
Well, I'd imagine if you're doing cognitive analysis and it's a lot of similar images, that deduplication probably saves a ton of space.
Absolutely.
Now, in terms, I was just going to ask for people who might not be aware of what that is, that column, the column then becomes the record.
So think about it as just like a column store, and you just tip it on its side and it becomes a row itself, and then you deduplicate all the data out and store it on just that way, and then you load it up into memory to get the performance, and then we don't have to look all through the data, right? There's just, you know, we can just kind of skip over to the part where we want because it's indexed, and we can just jump right to the data, right?
So.
Boy, that makes the cognitive analysis stuff supposed to be so much simpler, and then combine that with the R where it's all done inside the database.
Yes.
I can find the image I'm looking for, the human I'm looking for very quickly.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, another thing is we've just added SQL Graph to SQL Server in 2017, right? So now you have the ability to store data in a graph representation with nodes and edges, and we have new support in the syntax for T-SQL to be able to query using graph data. And the nice thing about this is things like column store, you can just add that to a node table and, you know, get the benefits of it that way too, like within the context of your graph data as well. So.
Wow.
That's very impressive.
Well, now we're glad it's on Linux. Those are some powerful features. That's and I think it's going to help, you know, something that directly affected Florida recently is weather modeling. Something I thought was really interesting was someone did all the predictions overlaid on top of each other of wherever they thought everything was going to go. Mm-hmm. And at what point, so they started out when it was way away and it thought, okay, it'll go here and here, and how many times they were wrong. Uh-huh. And but it was a better, deeper article about how we need better tools to analyze the data. We collect all kinds of data on weather. We need more tools to analyze it to produce better models.
That's right.
So this sounds like a great application for some of that as well.
You know, Tom, just to add to what you said, I know there have been several articles that I've read where they talked about the European model and then the American model and how the European model appears to be a little more accurate as far as the, you know, the predicting the path of storms and that type of thing. And I always, it kind of caught me by surprise because I'd always thought, well, you know, we've got all these, you know, these smart companies and these great tools here, but it was a little surprising to hear that.
Yeah, I heard that too, because and sometimes they were wildly divergent and sometimes they were pretty close together, and I guess that's how the confidence, right, the error, you know, sort of was worked itself out.
Well, and as we open up the logic, we have the data sets. We can apply each logic set and see which one was more accurate. Because now that you then look at that, that's interesting now. Yeah. And we can just do it all through a command through R, and it just jumps the results to us without. That's mind bending.
Yeah. We can predict the future, right?
We're predicting the future.
It's pretty wild, yeah.
Oh, great.
All right.
So I don't know if we've got any other questions.
I think we kind of skipped over it at the beginning. So the whole reason we're all together is, right, so that we've been seeing the releases ahead of time, you know, all the way back from May of last year, or March of last year, that Linux coming out. So right there, what, on Monday, what is that, the
GA, the general availability.
Yeah, is that September, or October 1st?
October 2nd.
2nd? Okay. Yeah. It's going to be the general availability release.
Yeah.
That's it.
So are you guys having, like, release parties or
but you know we do that in the open source community when something gets released. Yeah. There's always a release party.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. In fact, I think the release party is today and we're missing it because we're here at
night.
Yeah. We had one you know, when we sort of declared the RTM about a month ago, but you know, we have another party today. We have lots of parties. So,
All right. Yeah.
That's really important to the open source community.
All right.
We celebrate milestones.
Release.
We celebrate
releases.
Without
a party.
Sure, right.
That's just human. Yeah. There's a party to be had. Let's do it.
Yeah. You're there.
We need
we're
an excuse,
there.
And a new version of SQL is a good enough excuse for me.
That's right. That's good. Let's all celebrate.
I guess another little bit of a technical question. Is the logging and troubleshooting any different on Linux than it is on there? So
a lot of it is the same, actually, because we've invested over a number of releases now in what we call dynamic management views, which are just views that are available in SQL Server. You can access them with T-SQL queries, and they'll give you back all of the information about how SQL Server is performing, what the configuration is, and so on, information about the underlying OS and hardware and so on. And all of that is just the same, because you just do a T-SQL query against it. We did make a few tweaks to make sure that we can get the right information from the right place depending upon which operating system you're running
on.
What
kernel version and
things
like that.
Yeah, exactly. But for the most part, that part's the same. Logging is, you know, more or less the same. We have log files. Those are just files, right? We write to them. You can read them in the same way. It's the same output. But we have done some interesting things on the Linux side that we don't have on the Windows side. So one of those is a tool that it started out life as called the DMV tool, and now we call it DBFS. It's an open source project on GitHub, and what it does is it's a tool that you can point to a SQL server or multiple SQL servers, and for each of those SQL servers you point it to, it creates a directory in a fused virtual file system on your host. And then there's a bunch of virtual files in there that represent all of those DMVs. And so then you can just cat those files or do whatever sort of grepping or whatever you want to over those files. And when you open, if you will, those virtual files, we actually, at the time you file open, we intercept that call, we make a call to SQL Server, get the data for the DMV out, and present it as though it's the contents of that file. Right? So now you can just cat over that thing or grep it or do whatever to find what you want.
That's really clever.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. Great. That is great. So. Well, I think we've come to the end unfortunately, this was really very exciting.
That's really cool.
Such great conversations. I don't want to end, but I'll
ask you do.
Yeah. All right.
So you've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This is Mary Tomich.
Tom Lawrence.
And Tony Bemis.
And this was our Fresh Looks episode, apt-get install Microsoft SQL Server. And we had our conversation with J.G. Shrepp, correct? And Travis Wright from Microsoft. So thank you very much for listening.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you all.
You've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. If you would like more information about this or other shows, go to smlr.us. Feel free to send comments to show@smlr.us or give us a call at 734-258-7009. I'm John Miller. If you don't like it, you can
bite my 8-bit metal ass. That's bite with a Y.